You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hello, my fantastic listeners. Welcome to Atheistically Speaking, episode 48 with your host, Thomas Smith. Okay, today we're going to be continuing the great discussion with Justin Schieber, and we went a lot of different places in the later half, and it was really fun. Justin's really fun to talk to. I really enjoyed it. So check that out, and I will see you afterwards. So are there any other objections to that premise? So that we were talking about objections to whether or not there are even non-resistant unbelievers. And I think that pretty much, I'm trying to think if there's another way to object to that premise that you know of.
Of that premise, not necessarily.
So the other one.
So one might say in response to this argument as a whole, look, you can't make these demands of God, right? You're being very arrogant, petitioning God to give, you know, you're demanding evidence of a certain kind, right?
Yeah, say, who are you?
So, yeah, exactly. Who are you to, you know, demand this kind of thing of God, you know, to demand that God, you know, spell his name in the stars or to, you know, to do all this stuff? Which, I mean, by the way, like, why would that be a problem? You know, I mean, like, he's omnipotent.
It's beneath his dignity.
To spell his name in the stars is no more difficult than me, you know, moving my index finger.
Well, like, let me just say, I mean, I was going to say this earlier, but I didn't want to interrupt the flow, but I think it applies here. I was thinking about it when you mentioned the person who, in the beginning, when you said we were talking about the definition of atheism and you said, sure. In the beginning, no, you said if someone was just had never come to terms, had never come into contact with the arguments of theism and mm-hmm. et cetera, that thing. And that got me thinking, like, well, if you had the opposite, and this is how I think the universe would be if God existed, that assumption would never be questioned. I mean, everyone would have this little knowledge in them of God, at least somewhat. I mean, you'd have, it would be, I don't know, maybe it would be almost as certain as your internal monologue. You know, you just know, it wouldn't be telling you what to do. It wouldn't have to be, God wouldn't have to be controlling your life. But it would be as apparent, you wouldn't even need a miracle, right? Because mm-hmm. it would be, I'm imagining hypothetically that in a world where God existed, I think that it would be so obvious that no one would even question it. It would be like people running around questioning the sun existing. I mean, there's probably a handful of people.
Or something like the past existing, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It would,
you know,
be that obvious.
We might not have good arguments for these things, right? I mean, like any kind of argument that you could present for the past being real would kind of presuppose that the past is real, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you could, I mean, this is kind of what the project of Reformed epistemology is saying that, look, you know, just because we don't have good arguments doesn't mean that we can't have rational belief in God, right? Hmm. This is, you know, kind of planting its project for the last, you know, 40 years or so. I mean, the argument essentially, you know, that we're kind of outlining here, you know, as a rebuttal to the divine hiddenness argument is to say, look, you can't expect God to spell his name in the stars. Well, Schellenberg has something interesting to say here. He writes, quote, the argument doesn't make such a claim. He writes, quote, it does not take much imagination to see how non-resistant non-belief in its various forms could be prevented through the provision of more subtle and interesting forms of evidence, such as religious experience, whose character and force are modulated according to our intellectual needs. And I think that this is kind of what you were suggesting earlier, where we have a very obvious intuitive sense that God exists. I'm absolutely certain that some of the people who do believe that God exists find it incredibly intuitive that God exists.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I just don't share that intuition. And I think I'm rational. I don't think it's a fault of my rationality to not have that intuition.
That's well put. And to sort of branch off on that, it reminded me. I talk about my half my family is really Catholic and like really Catholic. And it was always so sort of depressing to me when my sister, she's got a ton of kids now because, like I said, mm-hmm. they're really Catholic. She has okay. 4 or 5. I don't actually remember. It's gotten to that point where I just kind of lost track. but we're not terribly close, but they're cool. I love them and you know, they're great, but it was really depressing. I think it was when her first kid was, I don't know, maybe 2 at most. Mm-hmm. He was already mimicking everything they do in church. He was like mimicking like, raising he'd find a random book and like raise it up above his head. Like just do all this stuff that I found just creepy as hell. That's in his like DNA, you know, that's in his like, not literally, but that's in his conception, such an early young conception of the world.
Yeah, he's that's building, how he views the world now. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. He's building his concept of reality at this very, very impressionable age. And mm-hmm. part of it is this weird ass custom where you're blessing a book and it's just that sort of thing. So what made me think of that was when you said, I'm sure it is really intuitive to people and that could be why, but I would say, maybe they would argue that it should be intuitive to everybody, or maybe we're wrong. But one thing I would say is that I would imagine, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but I would imagine statistically it has to be the case that far more people who are raised without belief remain atheists than people who are raised without belief become religious. I mean, it maybe that's not true. I hope I'm not wrong in that. Well,
okay, so I'm sorry. What were you comparing? Comparing
basically, I mean to say that we've seen that basically information just does nothing but create more atheists. I mean, like the more we know and the more we more everyone has access to information, the more that atheism seems to thrive. And I just mean to say that that sort of goes to show that these though it may be intuitive to a lot of people, I think it's theism is intuitive for bad reasons, which I think is probably obvious to most atheists, but I was just trying to establish that a little more. I mean, it's so true that the more information a given country or just a given person has, the more likely they're going to reject belief.
I would actually agree with that. So there's the issue of whether or not okay, I guess I want to make a distinction between,
sure, go ahead.
The gathering of more information tending toward the rejection of religious belief, and this other idea where, you know, a person born without any religious concepts, I would still say that I think that we are naturally, that we naturally tend toward beliefs in immaterial agents.
Hmm.
And there's a number of reasons for this, and I think this is fairly well, documented. So, for example, first of all, this concept of dualism, where the mind is a very separate thing from the body, that's extremely intuitive. That's a very natural intuition.
You know, that's fair. That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, so there's that. And then there's other facts about our psychology that, so you have, oh, let me think here. We did an episode on this where we looked at Justin Barrett's Born to Believe, wherein he argues, and I'm probably getting his name and another guy's book who was on a similar subject switched or something here, but if anyone's interested in this, we do a thorough unpacking of the evidence for this, why we think that theism is very intuitive. And it has to do a lot with what we know about developmental psychology and just different facts that we, for example, what Daniel Dennett calls the hyperactive agency detection. Right?
Yeah, definitely.
So when, we're walking in the forest and we hear a twig behind us, we are, evolution says that we're far better off if we assume that such a thing as a hostile agent, right?
Right, and the Dawkins, you know, the thing where the illusion where if there's an inverted kind of mask, you know, the spinning mask,
yes,
you see the face on one side when
facial
it inverts.
Recognition. Yeah,
yeah, you see the face on both sides. Yeah, that kind of that's a good point.
Yeah, and we are very quick to prefer as children.
Yeah,
we are very quick to prefer agent-centered explanations for phenomena rather than simply basic causal explanations. And we are also much more biased towards just world theory, which is that you'll get it in the end kind of thing. You know, you'll get what's coming to you. If you're a good person, you're generally going to have a good life, right? That might be true in a social setting where obviously your interactions are going to affect your future interactions with those same persons, right?
Yeah.
But I'm talking about like even natural disasters, right? Where people naturally want to explain these things in a kind of intentional way where there's an agent behind it. That's a much more intuitive thing. Kids will much prefer those kinds of explanations over, you know, oh, this is just the way that reality is and it operates according to just basic laws. And so, you know, a whole swath of scientific literature can come together and I think make a very compelling case that while it's not the case that the fact that we have human brains will make it the case that we are religious, but it will make it the case that we are much more susceptible to religious kinds of belief, mainly belief in immaterial minds and things like that.
And again,
we go over this evidence in a fairly comprehensive way in our episode, Born to Believe, I believe.
Look that up. I haven't heard that one myself, but yes, you're right. I think what I was trying to isolate, and I take that those points. You're totally right.
I probably went off on a tangent there. But
no, you're right. I think I misspoke in the first thing I tried to say. I do think was a little inaccurate. What I'm trying to isolate, and I don't know if there is any data to back this up, but I was just trying to isolate the fact that if you're not introduced to some of these crazier, maybe not just a basic theism, but if you're not introduced to a lot of these crazier superstitions and rituals and that sort of thing when you're young, I would imagine that it's far more difficult to convince you of them after a certain age if you've never heard of them. And of course, I don't have the data to back that up, but
I don't have the data either, but that sounds very I would expect that to be the case.
Yeah,
too,
that's what I was trying to get at. I did misspeak though, and you said was right.
Because I mean, at a certain age, you know, once you start to think for yourself or whatever, you know, after, you know, for a while, obviously, we rely on our parental authorities and we kind of just, you know, take everything at face value, right?
Yeah.
And so it's really easy, obviously, for kids to inherit the children the religion of their parents. I probably said that wrong. I meant children inherit the religion of their parents. But you know, once you start realizing that you can think through issues and you know, deeper questions on your own, you know, obviously a small part of the population falls away from those beliefs, but you know, a majority of them stick to the ones that they were brought up in because those were the beliefs that were there in their formative years.
Yeah. And
that's what forms their identity.
That's probably again branching out too much again, but that isn't something you would expect if theism were true, is it? I mean, would you expect that everyone just has whatever religion their parents have, pretty much overwhelmingly?
No, actually, that's a really good point. So there's actually a sub. So you have, you know, this category of hiddenness facts, mm-hmm. right, about the world, right? You know, the existence of non-resistant non-believers, but a more specific fact might be the kind of the distribution of religious belief in the world, right? So quite obviously the content of one's religious belief is going to be, you know, when we look at the world, it seems very culturally specific, right? It's as though, or I guess, and so what I'm saying here is that is clearly more likely on naturalism than it is on theism. On theism, you wouldn't expect it to be the case that, you know, that there's such a high degree of you know, that one's, that the beliefs of one's parents are so predictive of your beliefs, right?
Yeah.
That seems fairly surprising. And theism, you would expect people on the other side of the world who've never heard of these things have this kind of intuitive sense of God and
your God.
come to the right beliefs about your specific God and about how, you know, someone died a couple of thousand years ago and how that's really the key to a good life is to really submit to God and you know, repent and recognize that you can't do it alone, that, you know, all your moral decisions are really kind of contingent upon, you know, God, having that relationship with God.
Yeah. And you know, I've never thought about it before, and I know it's probably beating a dead horse a little too much, which is not something I like to do on the show, but just because I've never quite thought about it that way, but, presuppositionalism is even worse than I thought, because it's not just that we all know God exists. It's that we know that God exists. Like, we all know specifically the Christian God exists. And I apologize to people who this was more obvious to, but it's such a crackpot idea. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but given that Citen debate, it's like, because how are we, you know, you and I, to differentiate between Citen's presuppositionalism and I don't know, a Muslim presupposing that we all know Allah exists, you know, like how it's right. Not just that we know God exists, it's that we know that God, we know that it's specifically that religion, and we it's just it's insane.
Yeah, so when your arguments work equally well for pretty much any other religion out there, and yet you're going to claim that your conclusions are really the only rational, and all other people are clearly rejecting this out of their unrighteousness, I mean, that's an internal contradiction in your worldview, right? I mean, you can't hold those. You can't admit that these arguments would work equally well for another person, but then claim that they are irrational in doing that when you are doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, that's fine. And I wonder, you know, here's the thing I always wonder, and this would be another objection. So I'm not sure that anyone would bring up to the problem of non-resistant unbelievers, but does anyone ever just say, well, maybe God's not all loving. Maybe he's just he's not very fond of you, Justin. Well, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
He's not.
Well, yeah. I mean, so in that case, so remember at the beginning of this, I defined God in a very specific way,
right?
Which included that he was all loving. And so,
well, that's what
like
I mean.
That,
to reject the argument by saying, well, there's your false assumption there, I guess.
Yeah. So in that sense, it's not so much a rebuttal. It's more of a, well, that argument doesn't apply to me kind of response.
Okay,
right?
Sure.
But yeah, no, I mean, that's obviously, you know, available to anybody who would want to take it. It's just that it's a fairly rare pill.
I know, but I sometimes think that honestly, when I was, I don't know if I ever fully believed in God, but when I was still trying to believe in God a number of years ago, I used to think like, maybe he's just not all powerful. Maybe he's none of these things, but there's just some guy up there that like somehow created stuff and was like, oh, I don't know what the hell's going on with all this. Anyway, I'll be up here in my other reality that you guys can't get to. Like,
he stumbles into a room and finds the universe. Oh my God, I forgot.
Yeah, or he knocks something over and it creates the universe. That creates everybody. But really, it's like that is. It sounds ridiculous just because it's not the mythology we've all been brought up with. But I mean, that's more convincing to me. If someone wanted to say, oh yeah, there's a God, he's not omniscient. He's probably pretty smart. he's good at math. He's taken at least like Calc 2, you know, that sort of thing, or something like that, you know, that he's limited in some way so that he's not able to predict everything. He's not able to stop suffering really, but he, you know, he's up there. Of course, the problem with that is you'd never really bother worshiping him. You'd just be like, okay, well, I'll see you when I die, maybe? I don't know.
So there's a fairly fairly thick theological thread called open theism that still adopts the traditional concept of God in the sense that the open theists still believe that God is all-powerful, all-knowing, and all I'm missing one, all perfectly loving, but that they believe that it is impossible to know the future. And so when they say that God is all-knowing, they mean that it's, you know, that God knows all the things that it's possible for him to know. And so that the fact that God doesn't know the future isn't really a point against his omniscience.
But in a deterministic world, can he know all of the present and then not know the future?
That's an interesting idea. Yeah. So if one believes in, you know, causal determinacy and also thinks that God isn't, that open theism is true, then God could still know the future because he doesn't. He doesn't need to, because it would be possible to know the future if everything is according to strict causal laws. He would just extrapolate with his superior analytical powers.
Right, yeah. But he can't be part of that, though. He'd have to be outside of that determinism, I guess, because I don't know how you could control. Yeah, that gets a little too messy. He would know, he'd be able to determine what he was going to do, I guess.
There you go. Well, then he wouldn't have any free will.
Bummer. You're right. Ah, shoot. It's really hard to come up with a logically consistent God sometimes. So is there another another counter argument you want to go over?
Not really. Let me go through here. Well, I guess there is the argument that one might say, well, look, yeah, your argument seems good, but, you know, you haven't shown that it's not you know, it's possible that God has some morally sufficient reason that we don't understand.
Right, there you go.
God is mysterious, right? And that he has this reason because you know we just don't know, right? We shouldn't expect to be able to know.
That would be kind of along the lines of Blake's counter argument, I believe. Although he doesn't like to say that we can't know stuff and that we can't use our best guess for stuff, which I appreciate. But anyway, go on.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, so yeah, there's this kind of approach to these atheistic arguments is called skeptical theism.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing is that this skeptical theist response might work in some forms. Like, today I presented a deductive argument in the sense that if the premises are true, the conclusion follows necessarily. But let's say I just argued that, you know, that the existence of non-resistant unbelievers is, you know, is surprising on theism and is more expected on naturalism, right? So that, you know, these unbelievers, they constitute evidence for naturalism over theism. In that kind of context, this skeptical theism could be wouldn't work, and the reason is because you could say, well, yeah, okay, so you're appealing to those facts that it's possible that you don't know about, right? But of course, it's also the fact that I could just as equally come back and say, well, look, it's, you know, sure, it's possible that God has unknown reasons for there to be non-resistant unbelievers, right? Sure, that's, you know, that's possible. But it's also possible that there are extra reasons for God not to have non-resistant unbelievers, right? And so at the end of the day, those two categories of unknowns, they cancel out.
Yeah.
And so we're left with just being able to assess what we do know. And clearly, this evidential argument would still be able to go through, because clearly, given what we do know, our epistemic approach to these issues, clearly it strongly supports naturalism over theism. Now, if one wanted to, now remember, my argument that I presented was deductive.
Yeah.
Now, if someone wants to use skeptical theism against the deductive argument, they're begging the question again. And here's why. Remember, the argument says that God would make it the case that we would have belief as long as we were non-resistant. What they're saying, I mean, and so if we've defended our premises correctly, then they're just saying, well, no, you didn't, right? They're not actually responding to it. They're just begging the question and saying, but God does have reasons, you know, we just don't know about. That just begs the question. It assumes the conclusion before actually dealing with the premises. They need to attack the premises. And they can't, I mean, yeah, they can't just say that.
Yeah, that really, I was going to mention that when you brought up the counter to the inductive argument, just that that really shows, because that does come up. I mean, that is an answer you get from time to time, and it really just shows that, okay, well, you're just assuming, I mean, it just outlines the fact that they start with a belief in God, and then they're going to try to reconcile that with the world. And yeah, that's a good response, though. I will have to remember that one. It's true. There could be additional unknown reasons that, yeah.
Actually, let me read this quick quote from Schellenberg that plays on this very point. He writes, quote, "Attempts to show that even if the available reasons for hiddenness fail, there may yet be good reasons we don't know about for God to permit hiddenness." Right. He's kind of laying this out, and then he responds to it. He says, "Lacking convincing goods we know about, theistic critics sometimes turn to goods that we don't know about, thus evincing what Draper has called skeptical theism. Would it be surprising if there were such unknown goods, given our cognitive limitations, they might ask?" And then here he responds to this. He says, "But it's hard to avoid the charge of question begging here. If a case has been made, say, for the claim that a perfectly loving God would necessarily be open to explicit relationship in the manner that a hiddenness argument emphasizes, then unknown reasons would be surprising, for their absence is implied by what has been shown. Thus, it appears that the solution in question must assume that such a case has not been made," and that, of course, is to beg the question.
Right. So I think you summed that up great, because that was very consistent with what you said. Yeah, that's great. I like that a lot.
Excellent. Well, yeah, so then those are the responses that I know of for the hiddenness argument. And there are other ones that are a lot more technical to get into, but if one's interested, I would definitely recommend reading some Schellenberg. He responds to them, in my opinion, very adequately.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to have to get a lot more book recommendations from you. That sounds like great thought there. And I have to ask, I think, because I did talk to Blake, and I don't know. Oh, shoot. This might have been in a bonus content, so I don't remember. But he did outline that his counter... just to give you a heads up, I don't think this is the debate question you're thinking of, right? Or the angle of the debate that you're likely pursuing, or have you guys?
Debate?
Yeah, if you're going to debate Blake, is it undecided?
It'll probably be something to the effect of, Christian theism versus naturalism. Where does the evidence point?
Okay. Because he's told me, because I think. I presented a much more poorly worded divine hiddenness argument. He said that he thinks that if we all knew God existed and we had hardships, if we just could talk to, if we had access to him and we were able to talk to him and he wasn't helping us with our hardships, our child dies or something, because he's assuming that all would still happen in this world, which I guess you have to assume it's this world still if you believe in God. But anyway, that would make it so more people turned away from God. If they knew God existed and then hardships happened and we were able to like yell at God and know he was hearing us, then that would lead to fewer people following him or something like that. And I just, that one was really? Just so difficult for me to
That's
even.
That's very puzzling to me. So on my view, I mean, if a perfectly loving God existed and there were hardships, those hardships, it might be that God has, morally permissible reasons to allow those hardships, right? Yeah. Maybe there's a plausible good that is brought about through those hardships, right?
Yeah.
But even then, it should be the case that as with any loving parent, if a kid studs
why does he just tip us off to those
falls off his bike and hurts his knee, that yeah. God should be very imminent in our lives, that's when God should be the most increase the intimacy of that relationship is when we are in pain and when we need that kind of comforting most.
Yeah, why couldn't he just tell us, sorry, you need to learn to ride this bike? And it's like, oh, okay. Well, now those reasons are no longer not accessible to me.
Yeah, and actually for a good number of the population, when people are going through tragedies, what do you hear? You hear, of course, some people saying, the only thing that's getting me through this is my belief in God. But you have other people saying, you know, these are the times that are trying of my faith the most, right? It's when these tragedies happen that God seems the most absent to these believers. And that is very surprising on theism. You would expect that the child who, you know, had to go and, you know, get a, you know, get some kind of surgery or something,
yeah,
that the parent would be at their side, right? That's not the case. That's not what believers report. So, yeah, I mean, that, I mean, the kind of response that Blake has given there, that, that seems very, that just doesn't, I don't know how to make sense of that in,
yeah,
in
and honestly, framework. I don't believe I'm misrepresenting it at all. My listeners can let me know. I mean, he was on the show, and if Blake's listening, I really like Blake. And if I have misrepresented him, I greatly apologize. And if he hears this, please clarify, but I'm pretty sure that's exactly what he said. And he did say that it was an argument he was kind of working with. So maybe, maybe it wasn't fully formed yet, but it, I honestly, you know, he you know, tried it on me, and I was a little, I didn't do as well as you. I was a little just, I was so stunned by it that I didn't, I mean, what I do is I just start thinking, well, that just brings to light how much God doesn't exist, because like the idea that you right. could even be talking to this person, but then they're going to do some evil to you and not tell you why. Like, I was just like, that's so inconsistent to me that I didn't know how to sort of stop and word it sort of how you did. I think you worded it much better, your objections, than I could have, because it's just so clear to me, like makes no sense. But yeah, you're right. It's true. Whenever, you know, if you have a kid and they have to get a shot or something, that's when you're the most, you're like, it's okay. It's, you know, you try your best to explain. I mean, maybe you can't, but you're at least trying really hard to explain, like, yeah, you need this. It's going to be okay. You know, like that's the
right
thing.
And you know what, even, you know, I mean, even if, you know, so a lot of times people will, you know, as I did in the unpacking of this argument, I kind of used the analogy of a parent-child relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of times, you know, if our children are not of the age where they can understand, you know, medical issues, but yet, you know, I mean, some horrible idea, right? Where some, you know, pick the worst kind of scenario where some kid is having to go through like chemotherapy, like just the yeah. worst thing, the most gut-wrenchingly horrible thing to happen to a child. That parent would be at that child's side day in, day out, if at least if they were loving, right? If they were a loving parent, that's what they would do. And they would try to explain it to the child, but they might fail simply because their abilities to explain are not God's abilities, right? Or that child's ability to understand is going to be limited as well, because they're a child and they don't understand the complex issues involved. But of course, when we look at theism, we're not necessarily asking that God come down and explain the butterfly effect of our little bit of suffering and how, you know, 100 years in the future, this will make everything better, right? We're not demanding that necessarily. All we need, or all theism would suggest would happen, is that at the very least, God would be a comforting force in our lives and would, you know, say essentially that, like, that, you look, there's reasons, trust me, right? Just reminding us that he does exist, right? Just saying, you know, I reckon, you know, you're not going to understand the kind of complex issues that are going on here, but trust me, this is necessary.
Well, and here's what gets me about that, though, because we're sort of stuck with our reproductive process. I mean, we're sort of stuck with the fact that we have to make a
baby. I'm really interested to hear how you tie these in.
we have to make a baby that just is absolutely, you know, they're pretty dumb, those babies. They don't know much. And they have to go through this extended, you know, juvenile kind of development to where they finally, when they're like, you know, 50, then they're not dumb anymore. No, I'm just kidding. Finally, when they're a certain age, you can sort of explain things to them. God should not be limited in the way that he created us. It seems like he should have just been able to make us at least, you know, knowledgeable enough, wise enough. He got to decide how he created us, right? I mean, why didn't he at least equip us to be able to understand these deeper moral issues that supposedly, you know, we're having to suffer for. Like, he could have at least.
Make a good point. I think there's a lot of, I mean, so when we're working from these kind of cultural assumptions, it's really easy to kind of work within what is already the case, right? And talk about little kind of deviations of what might could, you know, what could have been, you know, slightly different from now or slightly different from what we know of. But of course, if theism is true, it's not at all a case that it should necessarily, you know, that we should necessarily expect the kind of world at all of what we see right now, right? I mean, why wouldn't theism suggest that God would create creatures that, you know, as you referred to earlier, that are all knowing, you know, that are just supremely intelligent beings? It doesn't seem, I mean, why would a being who's morally perfect create beings that are so so intellectually depraved?
Smelly. Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to.
But yeah, I mean, so obviously we're much dumber than God, and then we move to power, right? Why would God make it the case that we are not all powerful, right? Well, I guess someone could suggest, well, look, if we're all powerful, then we might, you know, we might
what?
in principle, you know, oppose God's will or something like that, right?
But would we if we knew everything?
Exactly. So you could also ask the question, why wouldn't God make us all morally perfect? If that were the case, then any kind of extension of our will would be in perfect harmony with God's. So we could all be just mini versions of God that are just contingent versions of God. That seems to me like a plausible argument.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be any reason why God would intentionally create kind of limited, crappy versions of himself.
This is, I have to say, I really think that this is my biggest shortcoming when I try to do debates, and something that I'm not very good at, because I've spent so much of my life sort of, honestly, I think a lot, and I probably don't interact enough with other people. I do more now with the podcast, but I spent so much of my life just thinking quietly to myself about these things. Like, yeah, if God is in charge of even the most basic reality, like, why would it even, no matter what argument you make of, oh, well, God has his reasons, or, oh, well, it's better to have free will, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, he can shape all of reality. He could have made reality such that it's not better that we have free will. It's better that we're all, you know, he has the choice of everything if he's all powerful.
No, and Eric Weidenberg makes a point like that.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Okay. Because I've got to the point in my life where I just am so, it's so clear that the world we live in is not a world that God exists in to me. But I think I've gotten worse at being able to say and articulate exactly why that is. So I'm really happy with at least two major points that you made that I just had never thought about in that way. I'm really excited to have better language to kind of talk about these things.
Cool beans. How's that for language?
Yeah, I was going to say you just ruined it, right? No, I'm just kidding. Next, you're going to say it was amazeballs or something, and then we'll have to.
I won't go that deep.
So yeah, is there anything you wanted to add? I mean, I think I've used up enough of your time, but I'm happy to have you. So if there's anything you want to add to what you were saying or go on, I'd be happy to hear it.
I have nothing in particular.
Okay, well, in that case, I think I'll have to let you off the hook because it has been a great long discussion. And like I said, I mean, I really have gotten a lot out of this. I hope you'll come back.
Oh, absolutely. It'd be great especially if this debate with Blake happens. It'd be really cool to have Blake on and maybe do a recap of some what.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, Blake's. I really like him, and I love having him on the show. Great. Okay, so everyone will have to look forward to that. I will let my listeners know if you haven't heard already as soon as any news comes up about that debate.
Yeah, I'll definitely be tweeting like crazy about it once if I get anything confirmed finally.
Boy, so. I was going to ask you just quickly, what robot do you have running your Twitter to where you're able to just rapid fire these things? Where are you getting all this? You do work, right? Like, where do you...
tell my work about what happens.
Yeah, because I'm sure anyone who listens to the show probably listens to Doubtcast and knows you and everything. But if not, go check out Justin's Twitter, which is it? I'm forgetting your handle right now, but it's
Justin's Way, spelled Justin's W-E-H.
Right. Yeah. Go check it out because it's a handful. Like, you just rapid fire all these like involved thoughts. I don't know what your method is, but...
Well, what I do is I have, every time I think of something new, I'll tweet it, and then I'll put it in this file that I have that has several thousands of tweets by now.
Yeah.
And then I'll just pick random out of that file. And then, you know, whenever I think of something new, then I'll both tweet it and put it in that file. And then I'll just randomly pick ones when I haven't tweeted for a while. I'll just, you know, throw an old one out there.
Because they're all, they're not, you know, there's not really many duds in those. They're all like involved thoughts. And I was like, how is he tweeting so many of these right now?
It's all a charade, man.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Good. Good to hear. So Justin Schieber, fraud, everyone. That's good.
End note right there.
All right. Thanks for coming on. I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks for having me. See ya.
Well, that was tons of fun. Thanks again so much to Justin. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I can only imagine, I mentioned it at the time, but I can just imagine this argument falling flat, divine hiddenness. Well, okay, not the argument, I guess, but I just know if I try to use this argument on somebody, on a religious person, they're likely going to say, well, you know, God has his reasons. He can't, you know, it's not like we referenced in the show. And Justin had a great answer. He said that, so there might be unknown reasons why he can't reveal himself, but there could also be unknown reasons that he could. And, that's a great answer. And of course it just shows that we have to use what we know to try to reason. And he'd also say that anyone who says, well, God, he must have his reasons for not showing. He knows he's morally superior to us. There's probably some better good that comes from it. And we just, you know, we have to either accept that or figure out what that is. He's right when he says that begs the question, but it doesn't mean that Christians will stop begging the question. And it's interesting. So it's not a critique on Justin or the argument at all. It's more just a critique of how I think it's so difficult to get through to people who are set on their conclusion, you know. And you could argue that atheists are too, I guess, but isn't it nobler to be, maybe not set on a conclusion, but sort of defaulting to, no supernatural being? Isn't that sort of, I feel better with that as my default than if my default, you know, my null hypothesis was somehow that there's a God. Like if that's my resting assumption, it's weird, but I can understand how it's hard to get through, you know, because they can always just say God exists, you know, in their minds, in their hearts, God exists. They know it. God is all powerful, you know, all knowing. Therefore, if there's something that doesn't make sense, it's because we can't understand it, because we're limited and he isn't. But I think, as I referenced in the show, I think it's just a matter of slowly, with enough exposure to these arguments. I know I certainly did this. I always say it, you know, I don't think I fully believed, but I was still trying to. And what happened was slowly more and more of these little things where it's like, well, yeah, maybe God would do this if he existed. And, you know, maybe God would do this. I think you can only say... Well, I mean, obviously some people stay religious forever, but for me anyway, there was only so many times I could say, well, you know, God, he knows everything. So it must all be fine before it starts to finally break through your sort of worldview. And you finally start to think like, well, you know, there's enough of these things that maybe, you know, maybe there is no God. Maybe that doesn't make sense. So I think arguments like this are good for that, but I don't kid myself that it's going to just be some knock it out of the park argument, but it's very well stated and very interesting. So that was really cool. All right. It's that time in the show where I got to thank my patrons. All right. Jonathan Moyer, Havard S, John P, Bangs, Naughty Bits. You guys, my top dogs are the best. I thank you guys so much. Week in, week out, they're always there. Same goes for Greg. Did I say Greg? Jeff. I did it again. I'm leaving this in just because it's how funny. Jeff Pearson. Dale. I've been talking a lot with Dale. Great guy. Cincy Farmer. Jeremy Sharp. Matt Garrett. Thank you, guys. Greg. I'm just renaming you Greg, Jeff. I don't know why. I think it's because Jiro somehow for me like reminds me more of Greg. Like there's an R in there rather than a, you know, because your username's Jiro or something. And so that's, I think that's why I keep saying that. Sorry. Yeah, no new patrons this week. Kind of sad. I know it's slowed down a bit. So, you know, I'd really appreciate it if you guys would log on to patreon.com/atheist, take advantage of some of the great bonus content out every week, new episode of bonus content every single week and early episodes and more. So please check that out. Thank you to those who do support the show. I love it. It's the best. Noah and I, oh, I need to plug Noah. I just was recording with Noah. You guys all know Noah, Scathing Atheist, podcast has taken the world by storm. It's going to be not today. If you're hearing this Thursday, it's not today's episode. It'll be next Thursday's episode. It was really fun. We did a little thing. I can't reveal what it was about. I'll just let it be a surprise, but that was great stuff. So, but Noah and I were talking kind of, after the recording was over about how cool it is, just how people are supporting podcasts. It's really awesome because it opens up tons of possibilities, you know, and I'm always impressed with how kind people are on Patreon. It's unreal, man. I never would have thought that people would be that great, but I'm doing my best to try to offer great bonus stuff and lure people in. So there you go. That's my normal pitch. I try not to take up too much of the time with a pitch, but you know, I'm going to mention it once a week. Thank you. I'm ready to end the show now. I'm out. See you guys. Ooh, we'll hit episode 50 next week, won't we? That's a milestone. I better do something for that, like record an episode. That'd be a good milestone celebration. So I'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.